Welcome back, everybody, to episode 100 of the Fearless Training Raw Knowledge Podcast. And this is quite the special episode. Here we are. What can I say? 100 episodes, two or so years later, and we are still around. We are still bringing the goods. We are still having raw, real conversations with real people for you. And I just want to take a moment to say thank you for every single one of you who's tuned in, whether you've been here from episode one or whether you're here for episode 100. We appreciate you, and it has been one epic journey. Guys, I have got a very, very special guest for you today. Someone who I met back in 2018, someone who I've been wanting to speak to for a long time now. And we're going to jump in just a moment. But before we do, I thought, because it's the 100th episode, let's start with something just a little bit special and take a walk down memory lane.
Maybe we should go again because I was looking at my phone.
Ready? Okay, I go. I can edit it, so it's fine. Plus, it'll be funny. Hello and welcome back, everybody, to the Fearless Training United podcast. This is the first of the series of the...
Backed down to a leaner weight. Mm-hmm. If we put on any amount of muscle, you know, in that time period, when we
have to see, okay, here's the issues we need to try and change, here's their personal circumstances, and how do we overcome some of these challenges,
how you're going to transition into that calorie deficit.
Yeah.
Then there's this long phase of dieting where you might have to fine tune
some things. I think it's a smart way to go about it, because as I touched on before,
would you take a misdemeanor? I said, a misdemeanor? No. I tell you how this is going
to
go.
Life to support the fact that my life right now is also in prep, rather than seeing them as two separate things, which I think is kind of the default.
It's huge. You know? To become the best physical specimen I could and try and win a Mr. Universe. But then it went a little bit deeper into the psychology when you...
And then we'll polish it and, you know, refine it over time and make it look super pretty, I guess.
Yeah, sure. It's all of our thoughts on this. But if an athlete is no longer able to add weight to...
just more like general population people and not having enough confidence to really show people how to deadlift, because I probably had concerns that they might get hurt.
So you can, if you can increase things out 6 weeks, you know what I mean? Do it. Yeah. And then you can cut more, you can cut a little quicker because you're not going to lose muscle tissue.
Yeah. You could be watching YouTube, and if you're on your shirt and your computer looking busy, people go, oh, he still works out. Doesn't matter.
I know those shoes are $50, but I got it. So I'm going to wear those way too much. I already know.
Yeah, you can be
too much GI distress. Now, the bacteria can use other compounds for energy.
Karen, usually I push a little bit closer to 2.3, 2.5 of like protein per gram.
The way to do this in practice is, if you don't think that sleep is going to happen if you get into bed,
Basically, you, as you practice the skill for many years, you collect a bag of about 30,000 mistakes.
And more conscientious approaches to coaching. And as you mentioned yourself, we need more than one approach.
There's maybe drugs and alcohol maybe involved. So, you know, and then some people go, oh, you're obsessed with the gym. I'm like, well, would I rather be obsessed with the gym?
Some good news, right? So first off, the maintenance volume is the amount of training you need to do to not decondition. And you could look at the cardiovascular characteristics.
But they still have a lot of the same responses, just with simple variations that you might have to put them through to get the results you're looking for.
To do that, so we took resistance trained males and females, and we had them both diet for 7 weeks.
It's a lot easier to, you know, sit down there with the client, discuss things, ask her follow-up questions, which can be answered there and then.
Their facilities faster, it makes us functionally dependent on others, and the way of life is reduced. So,
and then you have some people that would come in and like, you didn't know like what gender they were. You don't know whether to say like, hello, sir, or ma'am.
Feeling of the product. And it's funny because that's not because we put in more ingredients. It's because we put in the right amount
at the appropriate body doses.
Water, be the powerlifter or need to be the powerlifter and switch between them during phase to phase or day to day or whatever. So
all the accountants, all of the tradespeople who do their jobs go through an extensive phase of learning the details of their craft.
And then, you know, this was back when I was a PT and I was like, I'm a PT guys. Like, hey, how you going? You know, like, and
got reference points from your results that will feed into the confidence. You can't just be confident with no results. I think, you know,
I've got six different businesses or many different businesses I'm helping. I can sometimes be sat here all day and actually be like, what have I achieved today?
It still pops up every now and then where I'll be eating quote unquote too much sugar. But in reality, I'm just having an extra apple. Or
while you're licking a pussy, maybe a wet finger, you just rub around the area so that she's going to get a nice sensation from it. So
you should have a crack at everything. Mm. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, ultimately, you come back to the big picture.
Whenever I give a program to someone, it's crazy because sometimes they're like, this is cutting edge. This is not what I expected. And
make sure that you're openly accredited, and then they'll see the additional stuff attached to your name, whether it's master's, PhD, research, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be.
And they've just been mismanaged.
Because I'm doing my job right now. And they're like, oh, you're right. You know, so if I was more focused on being Insta-famous,
I
would
do. I was like, well, I'm not just training for my physique, man. I was like, and you got to have a bigger purpose than a physical appearance, because it's
related
be.
To scarring or the no nipples from
breast cancer. It's an anchor point, isn't it? It's like
there's different muscles at play. When we talk about bracing, we're basically talking about creating intra-abdominal pressure. So
there's no simple solution to this. Hmm. I think that a healthy understanding that moderate amounts of discomfort are a part.
And 95% of the models that I've worked with are amazing human beings. Some of the nicest people.
The ball in the opponent's net. Simple, right? There's so many guys on the pitch. We've got a goalkeeper, we've got backs, we've got midfield, we've got forwards.
Then if it's male or female, it doesn't matter, right? Because it's not contrived. It's actually part of my DNA.
And just like that, it's episode 100. And a quaint reminder that the best time to get started is always right now. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you the great, the powerful, the one of a kind episode 100 with the man himself. Doug Mellor, welcome to the Raw Knowledge Podcast, my friend. How are we?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Happy to be here.
Mate, it's been a long time coming. I've been looking forward to this one, but obviously we've had a few obstacles to navigate, but nonetheless, we've survived, we've thrived. How's things in your neck of the woods, man? Give us a bit of a synopsis before we dive in.
Things are good here. We just relocated our whole facility and families and employees and all that from Virginia, Northern Virginia, to I would say Western North Carolina. So the move's been great. We're in a new facility. We bought some land and some property and built out our facility. The brands are rolling. Everyone's good, man. It's been a wild ride. So we've been down here since probably now 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And our building's just getting finished up. So we've been in here kind of like a partial building for a while, but we've been operating business and about to open our gym next week. That's also in this building. So a lot of really cool stuff going on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an epic facility, man. And you guys have been crushing it, you know, everything into consideration there, but it's going to be pretty epic when you pull all that together, man. That's for sure. To just have everything in one place is going to be sick. Now, we're going to start off as we always do with every guest, and a lot of people are going to obviously know who you are, but if I was a stranger walking down the street and we met, how would you describe to you, to people or to me, who you are, what you do, and more importantly, why you do it?
Who I am, what I do, and why I do it. Man, that's and do I have a time limit on this? Is this a
nah, man? No, nah, it's okay. just so, real and raw, man. Whenever you wanna do.
I'll give you a little bit of background. So
let's do it.
I was always an athlete growing up, but never had size. I mean, I'm talking 5'9", 135 pounds, soaking wet senior year in high school. So mm-hmm. when I went off to college, I decided to pursue the academic side of things as opposed to, I mean, I was recruited to some smaller schools just because I had skills. I just didn't have size. I knew nothing about weight training or eating or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I went off to school. I started studying biochemistry and economics at Penn State and, you know, got really, I needed an outlet because I wasn't, you know, I was constantly either swimming, playing baseball or playing soccer, and I needed an outlet. So freshman year, a buddy, a big dude on my, you know, hallway, you know, got me into working out, and I really kind of became addicted. I gained like 30 pounds very quickly by just eating boxes of cereal. Like I was just, you know, I saw those gains early on and I was like, man, I'm addicted. So, I spent a lot of time. I mean, we're talking, this is like late '90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't, the internet was just blossoming at the time, which is kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah.
But I was doing all my research online myself and just got really into, bodybuilding and supplements and, the whole lifestyle. So when I went to like graduated, got into the real world and started working a corporate job, I was doing economic litigation consulting. And you know, I needed a meal replacement. I was using the old school Myoplex EAS packets with the maltodextrin and the chalky taste and all that. So, you know, I started competing in natural bodybuilding. I did a show, I won the novice. And then the next show I won my pro card in an open class. And then the next show I went on to do pro. And so I was kind of like building my bodybuilding hobby career, you know, on the side, and I just needed good supplements. And I wasn't happy with what was out there. People were using proprietary blends. They were using fillers. They were just, it wasn't what I wanted to take. So I took a $20,000 investment, created Core Nutritionals back in late 2004, early 2005, mm-hmm. came out with our meal replacement right off the bat, and, you know, founded the company on principles such as no prop blends, efficacious doses, really just the highest quality stuff. You know, if you guys want to use it too, that's great, but I'm designing it for me as an athlete. So, you know, that resonated really well. And as I became more successful through natural bodybuilding, eventually winning the pro world championship, drug-free pro world championship, the Yorton Cup in 2009, and then again in 2014, the brand really kind of took off. And, you know, for the first 7 years or so, I put every penny back into it. You know, I just wanted to create great products, you know, like it's just my personality. Like I wanted the best because I wanted to be the best.
For sure.
And, hey man, that should be a slogan. I should put that on a shirt or something, you know,
man, put that in the top drawer. That's the next t-shirt right there.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, everything I do, whether it was studying for school to graduate number one in my class or, you know, competing in bodybuilding, I just had this, it was almost like a drive to be the best, but just because I felt like I had something to prove along the way, kind of a way. So like, that's why we've came up with like our Crush It slogan, which is kind of going all out, giving 100 to everything you do, being the best at whatever you try to do, being the best you can be. And that's really kind of our why behind all of this stuff. But jumping back to the supplements in 2013, actually, I got rid of the golden handcuffs, quit the corporate world. I had a great job. I was like a middle management and kind of a startup firm. I had a lot of people working under me. I was making great money, great benefits, but I wasn't passionate about it. And so I went all in on Core Nutritionals, started opening up retail stores kind of along the lines of the same reason why I started Core is I wasn't happy with the retail experience, just like I wasn't happy with the supplement experience. So we started a brand called the Nutrition Corners. So I started opening up retail stores. You know, and then it's just kind of steamrolled from then. We've opened up, we started another brand called Merica Labs, which was a spinoff brand. We started an energy drink company called Merica Energy. I'm a partners in a influencer based supplement company called Arms Race Nutrition, where my partner is Julian Smith, launched that in 2019, grown the retail stores to, we're about to open our 12th store now, about to open a gym. So like, and it all kind of feeds off. They all kind of feed off one another. And so, you know, we have a set of core principles here that we live by, and it goes into kind of, you know, everything that we do. And we take them very seriously. So, That's kind of my story in a nutshell. You know, I'm now 42 years old, still train and diet and eat like a bodybuilder every day. You know, people ask me all the time, are you going to compete again? And I'll be honest with you, with all the employees we have and the businesses, and I got a 4.5-year-old and a 7.5-year-old boys, and a wife, and, you know, all that stuff. It's just, it's quite a selfish sport and quite a team sport that I don't really want to put everyone through at the moment. So I'm just enjoying life and running the businesses and still love to train hard every day. And, that's kind of where I'm at in life right now.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the synopsis, and there's a lot of great points to unpack there, Doug. And it's great, you know, to kind of encapsulate that you're a family man as well. A lot of people forget on the bodybuilding journey, as you said, it's very, very selfish. It requires so much, especially when, you know, you're at the top level. And as you mentioned with your philosophy, it's about, you know, if you're going to do something, you got to do it right. You got to go all in, you got to crush it. You got to have 120% commitment. And it's really good to see the background of that and the evolution as well. You know, for people that are listening, they can kind of get a bit of a picture of, okay, well, this is kind of how things transpire and evolve. And I guess to jump into the supplement realm, first of all, because we've had a couple of people on the podcast like Ben Escrow, et cetera, and, you know, breaking down formulations and qualitative approaches to supplementation, because it is such a minefield. What are some of the things that you've, or the biggest learnings, if you will, you've had in the supplement industry, and how have you been able to, you know, approach a really qualitative product that obviously started with doing this for yourself, but now obviously having this brand, which is recognized internationally for the people. Like, how do you guys source this, you know, quality supplements, the ingredients, what sort of the process behind that? Because I'd love for you to talk us through. I don't think a lot of people are quite aware of the time and energy that goes into it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, starting off, I was very naive. You know, I literally just found a contract manufacturer, ran 1,000 tubs of the meal replacement based on what I wanted to use, and did some sampling. And, you know, everyone wants to start a supplement company. And to be honest with you, every bro does, right? And to be honest with you, the barriers to entry are low, but like, anyone can buy product, but whether or not it's going to move and you're going to have create a movement and a brand around it is completely different. And nowadays, you know, back then, at least I was able to separate myself because everyone was using a proprietary blend. They were putting good ingredients in there, but they were pixie dusting and not telling you how much was in there. So what we really stood out back then, I mean, we're talking 16 years ago, you know, we were using, telling you exactly how much, so that you knew based on the science. And if you look at the write-ups, like on our website, even to this day, you know, we use very referenced to the actual literature that shows that this ingredient at this dose and this extract shows this type of response or this type of result. And so, you know, back in the day, a lot of people were cutting corners and they were doing like amino spiking and all this stuff that just doesn't benefit consumers. Today in the supplement industry, I think there's a much more informed consumer, and a bare minimum is you got to have good formulas. You know, you got to use non-proprietary blends. People don't want the non-proprietary blends. People don't want that blend crap anymore. But it's more than that. You got to have create a reason for people to follow your brand and appreciate your brand. And that's the brand story. And so for our story, it's living that crush it lifestyle, right? Like, that's what we've created, is being, I mean, we're a premium brand. We want the best for ourselves. We want the best for our consumers. And so we don't cut corners. So like, now, you know, it's different when you're just kind of creating it for yourself. Now there's so much more involved. And I didn't really have a mentor through this process. This was 16 years of learning. You know, there's all the legal and all the manufacturing side and all the sourcing of the raw. I mean, like, there's just so many steps into doing it the right way. And I would say there's a very small fraction of brands out there that actually do it the right way. And that's like, following all the rules and procedures, using great manufacturers that follow, you know, CGMP, you know, standards, you know, third-party testing your ingredients before, during, and after, you know, manufacturing on your own, not just what your manufacturer does. Making sure you have quality sources, you know, both domestically and overseas. Making sure you have all your insurance in place to make sure, just in case something does go wrong, that you're covered, right? Making sure you have a legal team because this industry is known for, you know, patent trolls and trademark trolls and all this other stuff. And you got to protect your own IP. You know, you have to register your own trademark and all that. So there's like not one day alone. Not one day is the same ever here in my role. You know, like today I was filming videos. I did a another one of our podcasts earlier on. I was literally paying paying vendors. I was entering product into the system. I was designing a new t-shirt. Like there's, it's just never ending. And that's what I love about what we do. There's just so many aspects to it.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's very multifaceted. And I kind of want to ask a cool question to paint more of a picture, I think, for the audience, which not a lot of people really get to understand or explore. And I imagine the corporate world, the backing that you had in that in terms of the knowledge would have helped when you made that crossover. You would have had a lot of skills that correlated. What I'd love to sort of go through now is, could you walk us through a day in the life of Doug Miller when you started out in the corporate world, when you were at the peak of your training? Like I'm talking, we can talk, you can get as granular as you want with like nutrition, wake time, sleep times, what you were doing, what you were training. And then obviously versus how your days look now. I just love to give people an insight into that. It's, you know, it's something that we sort of go, oh, you know, the day in the life. It's so popular. It's simple, but it kind of helps us sort of humanize a lot of these things.
So I'm 42 years old now. Mm-hmm. My 20s, and I was just saying this to somebody else the other day. My 20s were a complete blur. I feel like I didn't even start living until I was in my 30s. I know that sounds weird. I mean, I was doing big things in the bodybuilding world then, and I you know, got married at 20. Man, my anniversary is coming up. What was I, 25, 26, 27?
Yeah, don't forget that one, man.
I was 27. I think it was 27. I think it's our 15th anniversary is coming up this week in 2 days. So I got to just make sure I get that right.
Yeah,
you know, so like I, there was a lot going on, but because there was so much going on, it was literally a blur. So, you know, I was starting these brands. So I got married, you know, bought my first place. My wife was running a very successful personal training business. She did really well there, you know, and I was busy working in consulting, which could be anywhere from 50 hours a week to 80 or 100 hours a week. I was, you know, building the brands and building products and doing all that stuff on the side. I was training 2 hours a day. So, you know, like my whole 20s were a complete blur. And I really feel that like the 20s are a time when, and we try to tell this to our employees now, because we have a lot of 20-year-olds in the retail side, and the, you know, like the 20s is your time to really set the foundation for later on. And so that is the time to be working those 100-hour weeks and pushing yourself beyond, because you're young, you can do it, right? Like you don't have the responsibilities of the kids and, you know, everything else that comes with it. Right. So, and I did that. Right. So I, you know, my days, you know, waking up at, I don't know, 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, there were sometimes people ask me like, how do you get big arms? Right. Like, that's kind of what they asked me, like, how'd you get your arms so big? And one of the things I used to do is, at least on arm day, I would do triceps in the morning before work and biceps after work, just because I could, right. Like I didn't have kids and, you know, like, so I did that early on, but I didn't do 2-a-days usually, but what I, you know, I'd wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'd be in at work at 7:30. I'd commute downtown DC. I worked right by the White House. I'd work a 10 hour day. I'd work till 5:30. I had a microwave and a fridge in my office, even though we had kitchens and stuff. Like I just literally would work. I'd turn around, grab a meal, throw it in the microwave. Basically chicken, rice and mixed vegetables. I mean, that's what I ate, you know, all day long. Yeah. Ate a pre-workout meal around 4 o'clock, left work at 5:30, was training at 6, trained till 8 o'clock at night. And then after at 8 o'clock at night, that's when, you know, I worked on the brands and did all those other things until whatever needed to be done. And then I would do it all over again. And I didn't even like, it wasn't a thing. It wasn't, I loved what I was doing. And I enjoyed my work because, you know, where I was at, because I love the people. They were very smart people. I worked with a lot of PhDs, economists, and was doing a lot of stuff that I actually enjoyed some of it because of the people, but the actual like content and the everyday, like economics didn't excite me. You know, I liked coding. I did all that stuff and I like working with people and the team aspect, but like economics just didn't really excite me. And it's a lot of legal work as well. So, you know, my days were full. I mean, they were full. I mean, now, you know, I'll get in here, start training at 7:30 because our gym's right here at HQ. You know, get the kids off to school, help in the morning. But luckily my wife handles the details of that to make sure they get to school on time. I'm here training at 7:30. I train for 2 hours. You know, my day then doesn't start here till 9:30, 10 o'clock. And, you know, I'll work here from 10 to, you know, 5 o'clock, and then I'll be home. My thing is I'm home for the kids, right?
Yeah.
So like while they're up, cause they're young, they go to bed at 7:30. So like, that's their time, right? Like they get dad then. And then after that I'm working, right? So like I'm constantly working, but like, I don't have to be in a set spot at a set time because at the end of the day, I'm the boss. So like I can do what I want, you know, under some guidelines, cause I got to make sure everyone else is doing what they need to do. But things are, you know, quite a bit different. But it's nonstop, you know, there is no day off. The weekends now, like, yes, I'm, you know, with the fam, with the kids and stuff. And I try to compartmentalize, but my brain is always going. So, right. Like that's the difficult part, you know, I tell people it's how to be successful outside of the work and, you know, having a good domestic life as well is like, you got to crush it inside the workplace and outside the workplace. So like, when you're with your family, be all in with your family. When you're at work, be all in with work. And I got to say, that is probably the hardest thing. So like, I'm not perfect at that, right? Like I'm always, you know, there's always a, you know, a heart attack going on at work, something happened, blah, blah, blah. There's, you know, there's all sorts of stuff going on, but I would say that's the biggest struggle you have as a business owner, entrepreneur, and family man is that balance, right? Because they're, you have your own children and then you have your other baby, which is your business, right? And that's all, they're always competing on your time. So you got to have, you know, a support system, you know, you got to have a supportive spouse and, you know, just kind of know when enough is enough on the work side and put it, you know, put it aside. So my days have changed quite a bit. And, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. Like I said to my wife, after I left the job, I worked in economic litigation consulting for 12 years. And I don't know how people could raise a family in that environment. Like it was very demanding. There's a commute, there's in the office for 10 hours, just doing this. You have to take care of your own health and your own training and all that other stuff. Like actually running a family in that environment without flexibility is difficult. Nowadays, actually COVID helped a lot of people because I think they work at home now and do a lot of different things. It's probably easier, but no, I'm in a pretty good position at the moment. You know, I'm very grateful.
For sure. Gratitude is huge. And, you know, like you said, a lot of great takeaways there and trying to find the balance and manage everything. I love how you mentioned spending time with the kids. It's a bit of a pet hate of mine, even though I'm still young and single. You know, I've worked some big jobs like yourself, and I often see like people with family members and they're like, yeah, you know, like this is success. And I'm like, hang on, man, like you get your kids up, you don't even get to put them to bed or you just do. I'm like, that's not success. Like you got to spend time with your kids. Like even I understand that now, you know, I speak to people like yourself. I'm like, I learned that, work hard now, like you said, so I can set myself up for later, still work hard later, but then be able to, you know, run a mind time schedule. Cause you don't get that time back with your family, and you can do both. Like you're proof of that. There's a lot of people who are proof of that.
You just gotta, it's all about, you know, priorities, because at the end of the day, it's just like, you know, you're exhausted at the end of the day. You want to sit down and watch Netflix for, I mean, 2 hours and just veg out. But like, if you really have ambition to, you know, make something special in whatever you're doing, like that's 2 hours of wasted time. You could be reading or doing something better for yourself or, you know, progressing the business or doing whatever, you know? So it's just like, it's really about priorities and what you're prioritizing. And so, you know, I look forward to seeing my kids every day. Like at the end of the day, it's great. Like at 5 o'clock when I see my kids, it's just like, it's exciting to see them. And just cause they're young, and I'll tell you what, man, it's hard. The hardest thing, I've done a lot of stuff and accomplished a lot of stuff. And, I would say the single hardest thing that there has been for me is being a, you know, a parent. It's hard. It's freaking hard. Every day you're questioning your decisions and, you know, how you're raising your kids and all of that. And I think every parent kind of probably feels that. And the days are long, man. You know, sometimes with kids, the days are long, but I'll tell you what, the years are short. And man, it's like, I remember yesterday, they were just little kids. And sometimes I see these videos pop up on my Facebook and when they were little, I'm like, man, you're growing up way too fast. And next thing you know, they're going to be off of college. I'm going to be like, where the heck did you go? You know, so it's important to, you know, pause and reflect and show, you know, have gratitude and kind of count your blessings, you know, in addition to the grind mentality and the crush it mentality that we live and what we do, you know, part of that crush it mentality is also enjoying life, you know, and having fun and, you know, enjoying your family.
Yeah, man, it's super valuable. You really have to prioritize, like you said, and time flies. Facebook will do that to you. You know, you're like, oh shit, 2 years. I had a memory just before as well. And it was like 2000. Oh man, it was like 2009 or something. I'm like, shit, like, where does that time go? And I always say that to clients and people in my life, I wish someone would have told me that side of the coin. Like, we always talk about, okay, like, oh, you know, when will I get the physique? When will this happen? When will I grow? It's like, yeah, but the thing is, like, the opposite side is time moves fast. So enjoy the journey because it's often better than the destination. And then when you get there, there's something else, there's something else, there's something else. So yeah, I think
never, I mean, at least for me, I'm never satisfied. So that's the problem. So like, if you're always setting, and you should always be setting goals, but just realize once you get there, you know, you do need to take a moment and kind of reflect on what you've accomplished and sit back. You know, I think never being satisfied is a double-edged sword, right? Like sometimes it's hard to show gratitude. And, you know, I know my leadership style. I am not a fluffer, right? Like I'm not a high fiver and a, like, you're the best, keep it up the great work. Like, I'm like, great, good job. You know what? Let's keep it going. And that's because I'm constantly want us to get better and get more. So like, for me, I know one of my like development things is always like, I have to consciously like look for opportunities to take my guys aside and girls and women and, you know, everyone who works for us and tell them like, man, you are kicking ass. You are doing a great job. I appreciate you and all that because, you know, it's just not my personality to stop and high five and, you know, do all that because I don't look for it. No one does it, you know, for me. You know, like that's not what I look for. It's not my attitude, but like, I think it's really important to do that. And I know for me, it's always been something that like, that I struggle with because, you know, I just want to keep getting better. I just want to keep crushing and keep moving on. And so I don't reflect enough. I know I need to.
Celebrating the wins is important. Taking time to breathe, taking time out for sure. And look, obviously it comes across in your character, you know, how driven you are, how passionate, how motivated. And I want to ask about, you know, the training because people always, you know, ask me, you know, what's possible as a natural athlete, as a natural coach. And, you know, it's obviously a question you've got yourself a lot. And I show people. Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with some of my friends over here. Nathan Wallace was natural Olympia. Josh Hampson, you know, the guys we train with, these guys are big. They're strong, you know, very much like yourself. I always have the caveat of, you know, genetics aside, let's look at what's possible. And there's a lot of limited mindsets out there, right? People are like, no, I've got to get on gear. I've got to be enhanced. Often I say, I'm like, hey, look, man, you want to see the pinnacle? Check out my man here, Doug Miller. Like, you got to understand there's a shit ton of work that goes into that. And I'm not saying that you can look like that because everyone's different, but this is possible. So what I'd love to talk about is, first of all, like, what does your training look like? You obviously get after it, but people always say, you know, how does Doug train? I'm like, well, I don't know if he's doing anything magic, but there's a hell of a lot of consistency and there's a hell of a lot of intensity. So, you know, you now prioritize your training. It seems like you put that to the start of the day. I love that. How has your training changed over the years, if any, and how have you always trained for getting your physique the way it is, like in terms of philosophy wise, like what do you follow? Because a lot of the time it's simple shit, but it's not what you do. It's the way you do it. Right.
Well, let's break that down first. I'll get to the training in a second, but I think you kind of glossed over something on the mindset side of this is, I have never, you know, people have these different calculations of body weight and body fat percentages and height and like, your natural limit is X, Y, Z, and all this. And like, and I've never got caught up in that. I've never got caught up into, I always looked at like, I loved looking at, I grew up reading Flex magazine and Muscle magazine. I wanted to look like those guys. And, you know, I think some of it was just, I was naive in the beginning, right? Like, I'll never look like those guys, right? Mm. But like, that didn't stop me from trying, right? Like, and I knew the route I wanted to take. You know, I wanted to look good all the time. And I knew that you taking drugs was a slippery slope. You look good at some points, you come off, you look like crap. I always want to look like a bodybuilder. Not to mention that they're illegal and the health damages. Like, I have a family, like, I want to live a long life. But I never got caught up in the mindset of saying, of limiting myself of what I could accomplish by not being on drugs. I just worried about what I was trying to get to. And that was a daily grind of getting better. Like, I have, actually, it's right back here. Let's see. I have journals sitting back here. Mm-hmm. These journals I have, I mean, you can see it's taped up. This one's from June 4th, 2010 to December 23rd, 2010. I have 25 years of these journals sitting back here.
I love it.
So I just moved, so they're happening to be sitting on my desk. So that was just, that's just what I did. I tried to get better every day, and I didn't worry about not reaching a certain spot. And I think that's where a lot of people mess up. You know, they're so concerned, I'll never get that big, I'll never do this. Well, if you keep thinking that way, right? And I'm a very practical person. I'm not going to say you're going to look like Big Ramy, naturally. It's just not going to happen. But like, why are you limiting yourself? Or why are you worrying about not reaching someplace? Why don't you just try to put in the work? And then you might not get to where you eventually want to be, but you'll be a heck of a lot better than you were the day before, right? So I think that's where a lot of natural athletes screw up. They're worried about who's on drugs, who's not on drugs, blah, blah, blah. They get caught up in the drama when they're not putting in the hard work themselves. Now, getting back to the training aspect of it, my training is a little bit different now than it was. Like, I mean, we're building out a facility here, Crusher Coliseum, and I've handpicked and put a lot of money and time and effort into building this gym. And I'm creating, there's a ton of machines. I do a ton of machine work, but it's like, you know, so like I'll do, you know, hack squats instead of barbell squats. I don't deadlift as much as I used to, just because I know every time I deadlift, it just, I don't recover the way I used to, but we have incredible back machines, right? So I'm getting to a point where I'm realizing like, I can't recover like I did when I was 25, but I'm still making progress. I have denser muscle now than I did when I was 25. You know, maybe on certain exercises, I'm not as strong, but other exercises, I'm stronger and I'm okay with that. And I think that's part of the game is the longevity aspect of it. I definitely have more aches and pains now. I definitely take much longer to warm up. I'll take a half an hour to warm up, you know, and I didn't do that when I was younger. So constantly making progress, changing things up, doing things differently, it is what I do. Right now, I train 5 days a week. I would say when I was younger, I trained 6 days a week. I find I train Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. I take off Thursday and Sunday. And I think having those 2 days off, I always have better workouts after taking a day off. Just the recovery is better because I'm training high volume. My workouts really haven't changed in terms of volume and intensity. So like, I'm a big believer in high volume, high intensity, right? Like high reps, heavy weight is what I say. Generally, I would say what separates me from what a lot of people train is, you know, you'll hear the rules, 6 to 12 reps is the hypertrophy range, right? Like 2 to 5 reps is the strength range. I do 20 rep sets on a lot of body parts, but I'm doing the whole stack, or I'm doing a lot of weight. I'm doing, you know, it's not like I'm doing lightweight for 20 reps. It's heavyweight. It's high weight, high rep. And I know that sounds a little bit weird, but for me, that's how I like to train, especially things like back and legs. I mean, legs are always like 20 rep sets. It's just how I train. And generally I've trained that way for a pretty long time. And, I'm a big believer in bro splits. I think I've made a lot of my best gains training one body part a day. So one of my favorite splits is quads and calves, then chest, then back, then arms, then hams and calves, then shoulders, and then take one day off and do it all over again. And just putting, you know, 20 work sets in there. And, you know, giving yourself a full week to recover on those body parts, because you are using secondary muscles in multiple days. I've seen some of all my contest preps, that's pretty much my split. And I've seen some of my best gains on that. Right now I'm doing legs twice a week and upper body three times a week, and either chest and back or shoulders and arms, kind of alternating the upper body. Mm-hmm. And that's been really fun and it's been good for me. So my training is a little bit like past couple of years, I've been training more of that style than a full on bro split. But for the most part, the, you know, intensity, the volume is, you know, hasn't really changed.
Yeah. No, I want to underscore a couple of things. Cause you made a couple of great points there, especially that resonate with me. First of all, like you said, it's the mindset. I sort of frame it as, you know, focus on what you can control, not what on you can't. People are just too involved in that, you know, what about, it's like, no, like, let's just focus on what you can do. And a lot of the time it's limiting beliefs, right? And if you idealize that in your mind, then that's going to come to fruition, where if you're like, no, there is no limit, again, you aim for the moon, land in the stars, it ain't so bad. And machines versus free weights, love it. I think, you know, I'm 30 now, I'm not old. I know you probably look back, 30 baby, right? But I have also gone away. I used to prioritize the big barbell movements, right? We used to go, they're king. And don't get me wrong, I think they're great. And if you can do them pain-free and in the early days, brilliant. But that fatigue that you get, you just can't get that volume in and recover from it like you can with machines. I'd be interested to actually see some of the machines in your gym, because we recently were checking out some machines that are made in America all over the world. And man, does it make a difference when you have a biomechanical machine that really hits those muscles and you can just go to town. Me and my training partner, who's a massive fan, he actually wanted me to ask you about your training, because he's like, man, we've got to do some of this. And you know, we're doing high reps at the minute, right? And we know you can build muscle in any rep range, but people are like you said, they're just stuck in this. It's got to be this rep range or this rep range, man. I'm 15, 20, we do 30 on a leg press. You know how it is. Like those muscles, they will go and they will go and they will go. And if you're on a machine and it's safe and you just keep going. And like you said, you know, you're doing that with hundreds of kilos over time, you're going to build some muscle and you've got to be able to, I think, go there, especially in the later years. Like it's not all about training till failure all the time, but man, you where is failure really, right? Because a lot of the time people are like, this is failure. This is the mindset thing again, right? But it's like, no, your failure was actually here and you were so far under it. I don't know if you want to speak to that a little bit. Because
I think one of the things, and I've talked about this before, is that like at the end of the day, dieting isn't rocket science.
No.
Hitting your macros, if you're a bro, you know how to eat, right? Like, you know what foods are more nutrient dense, what you should be eating, what you shouldn't be eating. You know, I do follow macros, like hit a flexible, like if I want to eat a freaking Pop-Tart, I'll eat a Pop-Tart, but I don't really eat Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, baby, Pop-Tarts.
But you know that like having some chicken and a sweet potato is going to be better for you generally than a Pop-Tart and a whey protein shake. At the end of the day, you can still achieve your physique goals. And like, if I was getting ready for a competition, I would be eating Pop-Tarts and putting them in, because it's at the end of the day, your body doesn't recognize food that way, but your macros are there. But like, my point is, it's not rocket science, right? Like, people know how to diet or should know how to diet if you have a good coach. The thing that, and it's not that different from, you know, looking at different bodybuilders. But the thing that really separates the mediocre or the average or the good from the great bodybuilders is training intensity and their training. It always is that. I mean, you know, is it 50% training, 50% diet? You know, some people say, oh, it's 100 and 100, which doesn't even make sense. But like, I really feel that it's the training and the ability to go past, and I don't want to say past failure, like physically past failure, but to mentally go there and get to a place that is uncomfortable. Like, I've done some crazy crap in my life in terms of training. Like, I would find ways to challenge myself. Like, I've done, 200 reps of barbell squats. I've done, 10 sets of 10 deadlifts with 475. I've done 505 pounds for 2 reps on deadlift every minute on the minute for 50 minutes, right? And, you know, I've done some crazy stuff, and that was just thinking outside the box, not limiting yourself, not setting certain like limitations on what you can do, and just challenging yourself and really pushing. And so I think that's where a lot of people mess up. Some people will be following a program and they're like, oh, it says 6 reps. Well, if you picked a weight and you could do 12, why are you stopping at 6, right? Like, just finish the set. And, you know, or they're doing complicated weight training systems with where it's like, you got to do 83% of your one rep max for 6.5, you know, reps at an RPM, you know, 9.24. Like people get so like, when they're just really, they're forgetting the basics of really just pushing themselves to a point of being uncomfortable and getting to that point and then going a little bit beyond. And I think the great bodybuilders all go to that place. They all get past that point. And so I think it's the most important thing that, and it's hard to teach, but I think it is teachable. Like I've had some of the best workout partners that weren't near as strong as I was, but because they trained with me, they got to a point where they knew how to push past their own sticking points, their own limitations. And it was fun to watch that, right? So they were some of my best workout partners. And so I think a lot of young trainers, people training, need to figure out how to go to that dark place, you know, and they just take it too easy.
Yeah, man. 100%. I love that. I think people should listen to that again. I find there's a bit of a digression here where you get the people who are really analytical. And like you said, they follow the numbers. Like you, I have a lot of journals. I love that. You know, one of my early mentors, when I was first training in the gym, he's like, hey man, like you should write this down. I was like, nah, I don't need to do that. He's like, trust me, write that down. And it helps. But you know, people are either just so focused on hitting those numbers. I always say to my clients, I'm like, see this here, like this is a guide. It's not a gospel, meaning that.
I'm going to bring out the Holy Grail, bro.
Here we go. Look at this. Hold on, shit. Let's see if I can get my- All right. So for people that are not on YouTube, right? And if not, head over to YouTube, watch this now. This Doug is showing us a whole case of knowledge. This is all the journals. How many years did you say of journaling?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, the first one is probably, golly, I don't even know what year. These go back to at least, this is, bro, check that out.
Shit, 1998? Damn.
1998, 1999. And they smell like a gym from the 90s.
they smell of games.
My sweaty gym bag. So, like, yeah, I mean, and again, this wasn't me, like, I wasn't necessarily hitting, like, targets. Like I said, I'm not a huge believer in the RPE and the, you know, all this, you know, like, 80% of your one rep max. I just don't train that way because it's just not fun for me. There is some reasons why you would train that way and it can be beneficial, but like this is just recording what I do so that next time I do it in the same sequence or hit that exercise, I know what logbook I need to be. Right. And it's really just keeping tracking, making sure I'm trying to get incrementally better, you know, every time I work out. And you're not going to set a PR every time. You're not, but like, recording it and knowing it's there, I think is really important.
Yeah, 100%, man. There's a lot to be said about that. You know, it's sort of like you need to take from both sides. It's like, yeah, you need some structure. Again, that's where the journaling comes in. Recording, you need to know where you're at, where you're going, are you progressing? But at the same time, you got to get after it too. Like you said, if you can do more, don't stop at 12 just because the program says so. Like, keep going or put some more weight on the bar or something. And again, this comes back to something I'm really passionate about, keeping it simple, man. Like, the basics are the best. They always have been. They always will be. I want to ask you as well, because people get really, you know, they get confused. They overthink things all the time, especially, you know, I get a lot of young guys coming up in the gym. Alex, you know, what's the best to do this? The best. I'm like, look, guys, it's not always about what's the best. It's about what's going to be good for your goal at this time. So don't think like there's just one magic pill, right? It's the same with diet. People say to you, Doug, how do I get bigger? What's the one thing? You're like, well, maybe there wasn't one thing, but here's like success leaves clues. In terms of exercise selection, you know, we talked about machines, variety. When do you like to change your exercises or what's your philosophy? Will you just keep going and then when you stagnate, you swap something out? What do you like to do?
So now, and probably I would say for the last
Just a quick one, guys, before we carry on with the podcast. For any of you who are interested in taking your health and physique to the next level and you want to remove the guesswork, you're not quite getting the progress that you want, you're not seeing what you want to see in the mirror, and you're not feeling like you're really moving in the right direction, then click the link in the bio below, the apply button, where you can contact me. We can organize a free consultation, no obligation, and discover whether it's a good fit as coach and client. All right, back to it.
Probably I would say for the last dozen years, I know what body part I'm training. I couldn't tell you necessarily all the exercise I'm doing that day. A lot of it goes on how I feel when I get, even more so now than, 10 years ago, but like, it really depends. If something doesn't feel right for me, like I don't have a good mind muscle connection, or I'm having an ache or pain during a certain movement, I'll move, I'll do something else. Right. Like it doesn't mean I stop my workout. I just find what feels better. And you know, for the most part, I've trained instinctively like that for the past, really 15 years, probably, as opposed to following a set program. Like I know I'm training chest. I think I want to start with dumbbells today, you know, whether that's flat or incline, I kind of see how I decide when I get there. Right. And then I move on to, you know, X, Y, and Z. So like there isn't really, for me, it isn't a set program in terms of the split might be set, but the exercise selection. And you know, if there's something I really want to get stronger on, obviously I will prioritize that and do that on a regular basis. Right. Like, cause you don't get better at something by not doing it. Right. Like, so if you want to get better at deadlifts, you need a deadlift, right? Like you can do ancillary work, you can do rows, you can do all this other stuff, but if you really want to get good at something, you have to do it. So if I'm at a point in my training where I want to get better at something because I feel like it's going to benefit my physique, then I would do that on a regular basis every week and whatever, and try to beat the logbook. But for the most part, my training is pretty, like when I do deadlift, nowadays I'll do it at the end of my workout. Right, because the load doesn't have to be as great. I have less chance of injury because the load is less, but I'm still going to be able to stress and tax my muscles a lot because I'm already fatigued from the previous exercises. So, but most of it's instinctual. It's kind of how I feel on that day.
Yeah, and I think you sort of develop that sensory sort of intuition as you progress in your training. I know John Meadows, before he passed away, unfortunately, this year, something he said that I loved, and listening to a lot of people with experience in the gym, is like, you know, as you get more experience, you go by feel, and you can do that. You know what feels right. You know what doesn't. You can push it. You can pick, you know, the exercises, you know, work best for you, not by the book, and you can just take them to the house. And that really, it's almost as if training gets simpler as you become more advanced, but the way you train becomes more specific, more advanced in terms of like the intensity, which I find quite ironic.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like I love to train. So like I train high volume, high sets, but like I'm at a point where like after one or two warm-up sets, I can do one work set and I feel like I can have such good mind muscle connection and really finish it off in one set. Like, whereas before you're kind of going through the motions when you're younger, and you just don't have that same connection with the weights. And that is, I totally agree, that's something that you develop through time. So like early on, I highly recommend, you know, trainers follow an actual program, see what works and doesn't work, and do the hard things, do the squats, the deadlifts, the benches, things like that. But, you know, it doesn't mean you can't grow a great physique by not doing them, but you should try to do them because they do work. But like if squats don't feel right for you because like your leverage points are just different, you know, then don't do squats. There's squat machines, there's hack squats, there's front squats, there's goblet squats, there's walking lunges, there's leg press, you can build great legs if you follow the principles I talked about earlier of pushing past that point of being, you know, a little uncomfortable, right? Pushing to that point is the key thing here. It's not any one exercise is going to make or break you.
No, I love that. And I think that's important for a lot of the younger listeners to get around as well. It's like, we're not putting these big movements on a pedestal, but man, they're a great way to start, build those foundations, you know, muscular awareness, coordination, proprioception. And then, like you said, you can find what works for you later on. I want to talk about, so one of the most downloaded podcasts is with Cliff Wilson, right? And if our memory serves, he's the person who brought you into your last competition, I believe. We talked about some great stuff. We slayed a lot of myths. I want to sort of talk about your daily nutrition in terms of what it was during the competitions. Like, again, I want to show people how it's not magic. Like the foods you were eating, the quantities, you know, versus the off-season foods that you eat in quantities. You mentioned before, you know, you've got more flexibility. You incorporate foods you enjoy, Pop-Tarts, the like. Shout out to Pop-Tarts. We're always on that pre-workout. it's a bit of a running joke with me and my clients. But talk us through a little bit about that and your experience with Cliff and how he's helped you when it comes to competition, because you got absolutely peeled, brother.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've always been a bro eater. And you know what I mean, right? Like, I always eat clean. And again, that's one of those terms that some people don't like. What do you put Windex on it? You're making clean food. But you know what I mean. Micronutrient dense food. So like whole food based, like I like to cook my own stuff. I don't like prepackaged stuff. So that's how I eat when I'm prepping. So like I'm eating fully bro, but I'm following macros.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the quantities of the bro food. My big thing is oatmeal, old-fashioned oatmeal, rice, sweet potatoes. Those are my and Cheerios, right? Those are whole grain Cheerios. Those are my carb sources when I'm prepping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the protein side, lean beef, lean ground turkey, chicken, like egg whites. Those are my protein sources. I'd also throw in Ezekiel bread. I eat Ezekiel bread in prep as well. So, and then vegetables, broccoli and asparagus. That's pretty much what I eat during prep. Like literally that's the food I eat because I know how I feel on it. And I feel like now this is a little bro science here, but I feel like eating those foods for me, and I've seen it in clients that I worked with when I used to, you know, prep people, you get one, they're easy to track and you're consistent. If you limit your foods to a certain item, it's easy to track, right? Like you have less margin for error when you're, you know, macros really matter. Like the grams, the little grams really matter. Easy to track, it's consistency. And I feel like there's less opportunity for kind of bloating and kind of going off the program. Sure, I could throw a Pop-Tart in there, but I might get a bit of a response from it that doesn't sit right with me, which is going to throw me off. It might make me hold a little bit extra water the next day. My scale goes off, right? So things are not going to be a true apples to apples. Maybe you make an adjustment based on that scale reading, which is not really accurate because your foods are kind of all over the place. So I'm a big believer in when you are prepping, keep things simple, right? Like that, I really do believe that. Now, it's still hitting your macros. I'm still a big believer. You got to hit your macros. That's all you got to do. In the off season, like I'll eat whatever and hit my macros, but for the most part, I just enjoy clean foods. But for the, you know, I'll eat whatever, right? Like it doesn't matter. Prepackaged, I love pretzels. I'll eat whatever I want to eat. It's fun. But when you're getting ready for a show, I do believe there are some benefits to controlling those things. Now, I probably contacted Cliff about, I want to say it was probably about 8 weeks out. And I've already pushed, so my last contest prep, I already pushed to the point of, I mean, I was pretty much ready 8 weeks out, right? And so my goal was to get ready ahead of time and eat into a show.
Yes.
So you asked about some specifics. So like, I wanted to be ready. So like my 8 week out pitch, I wasn't ready, but I was pretty darn close. And the height of my cardio was between 10 and 8 weeks out. So if that makes sense, my cardio, I was probably doing 55 minutes, maybe an hour a day, 5 days a week. That was the peak of my cardio. And then I started to taper it off. So my training towards the end, and my training at that point, I felt like death. And my macros were pretty low at that point in time. Like I almost started like increasing. I did start increasing my calories and my cardio came down. I was still in a deficit, but I wasn't feeling like death. And so my training into the show, I was feeling great because I was more food than at my lowest. And my weight was still dropping. My metabolism was getting sped up a little bit. So I think I probably started that diet around 3,400 calories a day, 35 maybe ish. And I got down to my lowest. I have spreadsheets because I'm a nerd that tracks all this stuff. I got down to my lowest probably was probably about 2,300 calories a day. Mm-hmm. And that was 6-8 weeks out. And then going into a show, I was probably at 2,600 calories a day, kind of rolling into a show and still getting leaner. And it was by far the best prep. And the reason why I contacted Cliff is because I was ready so far ahead of time. I needed some eyes. And at that point in time, it's just mind games, right?
Oh, yeah.
So even somebody who, like, I was coaching hundreds of people at the time, right? Like, I did coaching. I still needed somebody to say, okay, do this, stay on track, right? Like, don't let the scale mess with your head. Don't let the pictures mess with your head. Just you're on track, right? Like, you need that second set of eyes. So Cliff was great, man. And, you know, the one thing that I would say that really helped was because it was so far, like, ready in advance, I was really able to go very aggressive on the rapid backloading, you know, doing 1200 grams, 1200 grams of carbs in a day, you know, 3 grams of water and 10,000 milligrams of sodium. And man, I literally, from my lowest in the morning on the Friday before the show to my height, like, I swung 10 pounds easy, but like, I could just feel like I was getting bigger. Like, I have pictures every couple hours and I, like, you could see me getting bigger. It was very, very cool. And so that was a great learning experience for me. It helped me help a lot more people after that, you know, who I was coaching, because that's not something that you want to try on your own, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's hard. When I would coach myself all the way through a show, I was very conservative, 400 grams, 450 grams. But damn, my body needed way more. So working with Cliff to do that, but the key is being ready ahead of time, yeah. Right? That's the key. And then kind of priming your body to be able to handle all those carbs was key. So yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer in getting ready for a show ahead of time and then, you know, kind of eating into the show, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm a big believer in that philosophy too. And it's super critical. You know, people just kill themselves in and they don't really understand that this is bodybuilding. And you know, the idea is to, you know, showcase that muscle and we want to eat in. I work with Dr. Joe Klemzeski as well. You probably know he's in the same circles. He's like the godfather, right? And like, eating up into that show is huge, man. Like, you can, your training gets better. You can, you know, rebuild any possible lost mass and you can build glycogen. And man, literally, like you said, you can look twice the size by filling out your physique, but we all need someone there to watch over. Cause at that point we ain't really thinking straight. Like you said, it's mind games. It's almost like the big brother in the room. You need someone to be like, hey man, like, we just need to kind of steer you in this direction. And obviously they've got the experience too, which you've recorded, which is great. I wanted to ask as well about, you know, there's a lot of naysayers out there with your physique. I imagine when you were at that point, you know, like, you look so damn good. People are like, you get these accusations like you're enhanced. How do you deal with that? I imagine you don't really care anymore. But when people will say that or ask you, what's your approach? Because you mentioned before it was something that you didn't want to do. That's obviously aligns with my beliefs, and no disrespect to people who want to be enhanced. But was that ever a factor? Like, when you were considering that, or when people approach you and ask that, what is your mindset on it? What advice do you give those people who are in disbelief?
Well, listen, man, there's YouTube. You Google the YouTube videos on me are great. You know, there's I'm a part of the Illuminati. Apparently, that's still one of my favorites. Jason Blaha did, like, he drew like spots from like my shoulder and my stomach where there's a little bump on my skin and near their injection points, and it makes a perfect triangle around my nipple. So my nipple's the eye of the Illuminati. It's hilarious. Like, it was actually pretty funny. But, and you know, there's all these videos, natty or not, all like. Honestly, you're either a shitty natural or you're on drugs, according to the internet.
Yeah.
So if you want to think I'm on drugs, I'd rather have that than thinking I'm just a shitty natural bodybuilder. So that's fine. Whatever. I don't care. You know, at first, I guess it bothered me. I'd be lying. But like, you know, I think I got to a point where it was almost just sad, like, that you think that it's not achievable. And really, that's just a reflection of your own insecurities. And I felt kind of sad for those people because they would never experience the journey or pushing themselves to the limit to try to get to that point with their own physique, right? So they would just was kind of what we talked about earlier. I was almost sad to see them put those limits, you know, on me, which is then thereby limiting them, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't bother me. It just really, in the beginning, yeah. But, you know, at this point, I don't give a shit what anyone says, right? Like, I don't care. I have nothing to prove to anyone. Like, it doesn't matter. Mm. It's sad, and it's a reflection of the person who is making those comments. So I just kind of, yeah, I feel a little bit sorry for him, to be honest with you. And, you know, most of them wouldn't say it to my face. You know, they're just internet, you know, keyboard warriors and, you know, just talking smack, and that's fine. Like, you're going to have those. You're always going to have haters. The more successful you become, the more haters you have. So, it's just kind of part of the game. When you're at the top, somebody wants to try to, you know, knock you off there or something.
Yeah, I love it, man. I think, you know, my dad always has told me, because he lifted his whole life as well, and he's quite an impressive physique for a natural. And he's like, son, he's like, when you get the steroid accusations as a natural, you do something right. Take it as a compliment. I'm like, yeah, that's true. And that's how we always go, you know? And even for yourself, you're like, what? Are you kidding me, man? Like, look at the size of these guys doing it. Like, imagine what if I use that shit.
Yeah, I always joke. I was like, you know what? I'm going to prove them all wrong. I'm going to go on a bunch of crap, and I'm going to show them that I was natural before.
Now, you'd be fucking huge, man.
Yeah, but I really don't want to die.
Well, this is the thing. It's not
worth it. We're not going to do that.
You know, it's like, think about, you got your family, you know, you got your kids, you got your business, you got all these other family members in business. Like you said, you don't got to prove anything to anyone. And you know what? You can stand the test of time with that muscle and live a long and healthy life. For me, it's a no-brainer. When you look at the pros and cons, it's a no-brainer, literally. But that's very much my opinion, for sure. But
that comes with perspective and like wisdom that you gain through time. I mean, I get the temptation of these young kids, especially with the internet. Like, we didn't have Instagram when I was 20 years old, right?
Yeah.
The temptation where they see these people getting massive very quickly, and, you know, those pressures of like social media. So like, and their brain is just at 20, you're just not fully developed. You don't see the bigger picture. You just want to look jacked for the girl down the street, you know? It's hard. I'm sure it's harder these days than it was when I was 20. I just, you know, there was less, I guess, internet pressure then, you know? So yeah. I don't know. It's a very personal decision. And man, if I could just, I mean, the amount of people that make it or make a career or a living and that are, you know, based on the drugs. So, I mean, like, the best bodybuilders in the world, it's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent. And then you, even when they do get there, they win Mr. Olympia, whatever, then you have the downside. I know Ronnie said he never regretted any of that, but then you have the downside of most likely you're going to die 20 years young. Best case scenario. Like, that's the harsh reality of it. So I just hope that those 20-year-olds out there listening really take that into consideration. And I know it's a hard thing to process at the time, especially with the generation today that just wants everything now. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of people sitting out there in their 40s and 50s that use drugs and would love to go back to the 20-year-old self and tell them not to do it.
Yeah, man, that's gold. Super valuable. And that's, I couldn't agree more with that. Even at my age, I see so many young guys in the gym already abusing it, and they're not even 20. And I'm thinking, man, I know it's hard, but you've got to think of the future, because there is this point where you're not going to care about being that jacked, and you can still do that anyway. But, you know, when you're on all these hormone replacements and your body's just fucked, like, again, you got to pay the piper at some point. Like, you know what I mean? Like, payment day comes. Before we get into some more rapid fire questions, before we round it out, Doug, I want to ask, you know, what does the future hold for you in terms of plans, you know, with Core Nutritionals, with the gym, you know, with the supplement shops? You mentioned before, you know, the question that everyone would love to ask you is, you know, are you going to compete again? When is Doug Miller going to compete again? You've got other focuses at the moment. So maybe give us a bit of an insight to where you want to go with everything. And is there an opportunity? Will there be a time where you step on the stage again and grace it with your appearance?
You know, there's a probably like a 5% of me that wants to step on stage again, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie to you and say that, like, and I feel like I could get on stage now and compete at a very high level again. It's just whether or not I want to go through that and all the sacrifices. And to be honest with you, it would be good for the brand. It would good help with business. But there would be other sacrifices that need to be made. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's just like there is something about going out with a splash. And I couldn't be happier with my last competition season 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And I won 3 shows. I competed against in the NPC and won against everyone else who was, you know, using. I won an overall there. I won the Yorton Cup. I kind of accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. So, you know, to think that, you know, will I ever be as good as I was when I was 34 or 35? I don't know, maybe. But like, that was a pretty perfect season. So for me to go out, you know, let's say I come back and compete with, I'm 50, pretty sure when I'm 50 and staying natural, I probably won't look as good as I was when I was 35, mm-hmm. right? Like that's, you know, that's the reality that everyone needs to face at some point. And like, would I want to do that? Or do I just kind of keep the that 35-year-old competitor in my mind and be okay with that, right? Like, make that my legacy. So, like, that's something that I actually think about, right? Like, you know, that's part of it. And, you know, I definitely have more aches and pains now to go through that, to get to that level of conditioning. I will say at this age, though, it's easier for me to stay conditioned year-round. Like, I mean, even now, sitting at 210, like I have lines in my glutes. And I think that's just muscle maturity, right? Like that's just, I can be leaner. You just have a leaner, harder look when you get older. So in terms of competing, I'm not going to say never, but you know, right now it's really not in the game plan. For the brands, you know, 2020, when a lot of brands stepped back, we put our foot on the gas and went hard on core with the rebrand, and it's taking it to another level. We're having like a massively, we've been in business for a long time and we're seeing massive growth this year and, you know, record year, and core is not slowing down. We're, you know, we're going to put out I don't know how many dozens of new products this year when it's all said and done. So like that brand is going very strong. America Labs and America Energy, we just went through a rebrand with our energy drink. We're going through a rebrand with the brand there. So that's a big focus to kind of COVID, probably out of all our brands, COVID affected America Labs the most just because of the way it was distributed. It's a very distribution heavy game. So this will be the next 6 months to a year will be very focused on America Labs. Arms Race Nutrition, on which is our GNC exclusive brand and also available, you know, overseas and stuff, is continually to increase every month, right? Whereas this time of year, things slow down in GNC, our sales numbers continue to go up. We have a great team, a lot of stuff in place. And the sky's the limit for that brand. That brand is on a rocket ship as well. And to be honest with you, we have opportunities to create other brands. We've now kind of are, you know, well established in the industry. We have a lot of connections. I feel like we've done it the right way. And so I've garnered a lot of respect from other people in the industry. And there's an opportunity for us to bring out multiple brands within the next couple of years under the umbrella of what we do. The stores, we're opening our first store, our store number 12 in North Carolina, probably within a month. So we have 11 in Virginia. I could see 10 in North Carolina, right? So like, do we get to 50 stores? Maybe. I don't know. People said retail's dead. Retail's not dead if you give them a really good experience. And so the leadership team and the people that we have in place now, I feel like it's taken us a while to get to that point, but we have a lot of people that live and breathe like our core values and the brands here. And so that's crucial for helping us to continue to expand. And then we're doing some other passion projects like the gym. Crush Coliseum's opening next week. And so that's a very cool thing. We're looking to spin off the nutrition corners and create the training corner, which is like a hardcore gym niche type in the same places we would put nutrition corners. So like there's opportunities there. I've gotten into the real estate game now that we own our headquarters. So like, that's fun. There's a lot of, we have a lot of crazy ideas. We have fun at what we do. And, you know, a lot of what we do is driven by our staff here, right? Like if people have passion, you know, like I like to lean into them because they'll always perform better if they're really passionate about something. So who knows what other businesses we may get into. Everyone down here in North Carolina is into guns these days. So we might open a gun shop. I don't know. Right. And we have the property now to do it. So you never know what we're going to get into. And so like, and that's what makes it fun is doing this whole thing with a group of like-minded people, that, you know, really understand my vision and share the same core values. Nothing better than that. Whatever it is, whether it's supplements or making widgets or whatever, having that group of people do it with you and kind of go to war with you is what makes it so fun. And then just on the energy drink side, like this year is going to be a big year for placing energy drink in a much broader distribution. We have a great team on board. So yeah, man, it's, we won't be bored. If nothing else, we won't be bored here.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, that's super exciting. There's so much on the horizon there, you know, building the brand, the culture, the community, the environment. I think that's really big. You know, people make the place. I always say that. And it sounds like, you know, you're building that on and forward. And like you said, pioneering, you've got to be open to whatever comes your way. Like you said, you know, you got to be dynamic. You got to be adaptable. The last 2 years on this planet have showed us just that when people have contracted, businesses have expanded into the space, and hey, if there's an opportunity, man, grab it with both hands. So yeah, that's super cool stuff. And we'll definitely get some links before we head out on that. But before we do, a couple of rapid fire questions. I ask all my guests are a bit more fun and lighthearted in nature. And the first one is, what is your favorite food? If you had one last meal, what would it look like? Or what's your absolute go-to, something you can't say no to?
Man, I love good sushi. I absolutely love good sushi. So I know that's like, I don't know if you're looking for carrot cake or pizza or whatever, but for me, man, it's sushi, like an amazing sushi.
Yeah, no, it's whatever it is to you, man. Like at the end of the day, everyone's got some people.
Well, I know what people are wanting, like what's the dirty stuff you like to eat? But like for me, it's like sushi, which is kind of clean.
Yeah.
So like, man, a good sushi is just, it's heaven for me.
Well, it is. It's simple and it hits the spot, man. That's all that matters. And okay, what about if you could choose any superpower, and you can make one up if you like, what would it be and why?
Bro, that's a geez.
It's a good one, eh?
That is a tough one. You know, so man, you know,
got you with that one.
Oh man, there's so many. So like one of the things is like I like Wolverine, right? He's like self-healing. So as a bodybuilder, like the regeneration and like, and I don't want to say I want to live forever, because at the end of the day, that's not why we're here on earth. I don't think that that's a realistic thing. Do I want to live here as long as I can realistically? Yeah. But staying youthful through, you know, your late stages would be pretty darn awesome. And man, wouldn't it be awesome to be able to fly? Like that's just one of the coolest ones ever. So like, I don't know. It's tough. One of those two.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Well, maybe your ability would be the superpower would be to change superpowers and just have different ones every day. Maybe that's.
Hey, you've thought about this. You've thought about this a lot. I can tell.
I've had all, you know, 100 now people answers. So I just collate just everything. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just make one up. That'd be it. Like the genie in the bottle, unlimited wishes. Like, let's do it.
Yeah, right.
What about if you could invite three people to dinner, and again, top of your head, because this will change, dead or alive, who would you have at the table eating sushi with you?
Jesus Christ, that's an easy one. Donald Trump. No, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to.
People would be like, be
interesting.
What?
I would love to have Jesus Christ and Donald Trump together at dinner for sushi. That would be pretty darn good. So I I look back to some of our founding fathers of this country, and I just, especially with as crazy political and divided as our country is today, I think it would be awesome to have some of those people back in the day, whether it's George Washington or a little bit later, Abraham Lincoln, somebody like that, a true leader who has seen all the different, you know, aspects of that time. I think having one of them there as well would be pretty cool. So it would be interesting to have Jesus Christ, Donald Trump, and like George Washington together. That would, I mean, that sounds like a party.
It does. That would be a very democratic event, especially if they started seeing eye to eye, be like, hey, okay, fair enough. There'd be some interesting theories coming out there, that's for sure. But man, that's a good one. Very thought-provoking indeed. And the last one, really simple, is before I get into my main last question, but if you could offer any advice that would help people improve their health every day, their vitality, what's the one thing that you would advise people to do?
Oh, well, the one thing, I mean, I think with your average person, like if I'm speaking to the population as a whole, I think movement is key, right? So like, and this goes for an athlete. When you get injured, you don't lay in bed. You know, part of the recovery process is getting, if I tweak my back deadlifting, I'm going to be trying to put motion back into the spine and all those other stabilizers as soon as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. So like people that get sick or are not that healthy and they just start becoming a total vegetable, right? So for me, movement is key. And so that's whether you're an athlete and then injured or you're just an average person that's just sitting their ass on the couch. You gotta put movement into your body. I think that is the key to longevity. And then don't eat like an asshole. I mean, to be honest with you, most of Americans eat like just total jerks. You know, like just have a little bit of self-control and a little bit of self-respect. And it goes a long way.
Yeah, this is true, man. And great advice, that's for sure. And the final question I ask all of my guests, Doug, is could you identify a fear that you've had in your life? Could be current, could be past, can be big, can be small.
You say a fear?
A fear. And
spiders, man. Spiders, oh, yeah. I hate them. I swear, like, they are the devil's spawn. I hate spiders. And my teammates here are like, they joke and my wife makes fun of me. Like if there's spider, Steph, come and get this spider. Like I just don't mess with spiders. So like for me, that is definitely one of them. I know that sounds a little bit crazy, but I hate spiders, which is funny because like they're so small and I'm big, right? Like I shouldn't hate spiders.
Well, I do. I mean, we say that when me and you, we caught up, what, in 2018, we were talking before we turned the mic on. So you've been to Australia. You've seen the size of the spiders out here, right?
There's some big ass spiders in Australia. I think part of one of the other fears is just that, and it's not really a fear, but it's just like, am I doing enough? And I mean that as in like, when I go to bed at night, did I do enough? Did I do enough to grow the businesses? Did I do enough to be a good dad? Did I do enough, to be good to my wife? Did I do enough to, what, like represent my beliefs? Like all of that is always a question. And I think part of that fear is what drives me to be you know, good at certain things. I don't think it's necessarily a bad fear, but it's something that I do think about, right? Like, because I feel like we could always do a little bit more, right? Like, am I doing enough for just our community? Like, you know, like, does that even cross my mind to think about like the community or whatever? And it's just like, I always wonder, am I doing enough? And so, you know, that is a fear of mine that, you know, I don't want to, you know, breathe my last breath and like, man, I didn't do enough, right? Like, I don't want to be that way. So that's something else.
For sure, man. That seems to be the most common thread with all the conversations, with the great minds, with the people who are, you know, getting after it, achieving things, making it happen, whatever you want to call it. It seems to be that whole fear of just, am I getting enough done? Is there more? And quite frankly, I think, you know, after really marinating on this and hearing so many talented people tell me that in one way or another, it seems like that is kind of one of the parts that makes people great, is the fact that, like you said before, it's not about, oh shit, like you got to celebrate the wins. But if you're constantly striving for more or reassessing, have I done enough? That is the thing that inevitably gets you to do more and gets you ahead, because you're like, the benchmark's here, but you've overshot it. But then we still need to do more. So that's really cool to hear. And definitely, again, success leaves clues. Doug, thanks for your time, man. It's been absolutely phenomenal. It's been a long time coming. I've loved it. For people who want to know more, people who want to follow along, they want to check out the supplements, they want to follow you, where are the best places to go, my friend?
There's a lot. Four Nutritionals, Arms Race Nutrition, America Labs, America Energy, The Nutrition Corners, Crush It Coliseum. I mean, your best place probably for all things that I'm involved in is Doug Miller Pro is my Instagram handle. And my YouTube. So, but mostly my Instagram handle is where I'm most active. So Doug Miller Pro.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I'll put that in the show notes below, whether you're watching on YouTube, whether you're listening on any platform, because like you said, we'll send people to the mothership and then they can click links and go from there. And I'm sure they're going to learn a lot. My friend, it's been great for everyone listening and watching. Make sure, again, you already know, guys, like, comment, subscribe. Very special episode here. If you want to see more, if you want to, you know, ask any questions, you want to reach out to Doug, go and do so. That's easy enough. Until the next episode, you guys know, stay fearless. And ladies and gentlemen, the great and powerful Doug Miller.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
For those of you who are confused, frustrated, and sick and tired of not seeing the results that you want or deserve, make sure that you click the Apply for Coaching button in the description below and line up a completely free consultation with myself, where we can discover if it's a good fit as client and coach and take your health and physique to the next level once and for all.